I'd like to call the committee to order at the present time. As members show up and get here, they can find a seat. I know it's going to be crowded today, and there's a lot on the agenda that wants to be spoken to. I'm happy to be back here and having what I think is going to be a critical discussion about an angel investment incentive, which is an important tool to growing well-paying jobs in the state. I want to thank all the members and the representatives of the administration who have put significant time into working on this concept over the summer. I want to make a special thanks to Mr. Alexander, Mr. Bianco, Life Science Alley, and the BioBusiness Alliance for having spent too many hours together with myself and Mr. Dabney and one of the senators. I'm hoping we can incorporate the best of each of these proposals and move this initiative forward this year. I'm told the Tax Committee works a little different than the Bioscience Committee, so I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview of the day. In order to allow plenty of time for discussion, Mr. Michaels from House Research is going to explain the bills and identify the key differences. Then we'll take testimony from people who wish to testify, but I do want the testifiers to realize they need to be brief. This is not the first time we've heard this bill in either committee. I want to make sure we leave at least 45 minutes for the members to question the testifiers at the end of the time. So hopefully the testifiers will stick around and be ready to answer questions. That's all I have to say. I think my co-chair, Representative Lunceski, wanted to say a few words, and we're going to move on.
Yes, welcome. Good morning. Nice to have us all here together. I know that the committee members who are here, the two sets of different committee members, have both spent time on these issues over the past number of years. And just recall for folks who may not know this, who aren't legislators, this concept was in the 2007 tax bill, was vetoed by the governor, was again in the 2009 tax bill, was vetoed by the governor. And there's certainly a gamut of people here around this issue. Folks know that some of us support it strongly, some don't support it too much, but nonetheless, it has been an initiative for the current majority for quite a while, and many minority members, a priority for the governor and leadership in both the House and Senate. So we wanted to really take a really thorough look at it in a substantive way. And I should tell you, I actually approached Representative Mahoney and asked him if he would be interested in doing this in this format so that we could view this as an informational hearing. No matter where you sit, you know, I think we first have to think through, should we even be doing this? But then secondly, if we're going to do it, how? And I think as you unfold the pieces, there are a lot of very technical details that have to be worked out for this issue. And so for folks who just want to ram something through quickly, the Tax Committee has to actually construct the language. And so all these different nuances have to be worked through. I would say that for people who are maybe misunderstanding where I'm at, I just want to be clear. I did introduce in a press conference an angel investor credit and said then, and will say again, that the reason I chose in the bill that was introduced to put the governor's language in is to respect that this is a top priority for the governor. So folks who know how the process works around here understand that for a bill to be signed, it has to meet the needs of the governor. So folks need to, I think, just maybe it'd be helpful today for people to put down their swords and just really step back, since we can't vote on anything, and think about, you know, what is the evidence to say we should do this, and if we're going to do it, how should we do it? And then understand that those advocates who have been working on this, like Representative Mahoney, Representative Dabney, and Commissioner of Revenue and others, are going to have to really think through a lot of the mechanics that are not ironed out in any of these bills. So that's what we really want to hopefully get into today, where we really, really try to hear each other rather than fight with each other. So I'm just hoping it can be a productive meeting in that regard, and I look forward to the input from everybody.
So having said that, is Mr. Michaels here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. What I'm going to do is to go through this grid very quickly. It should only take 5 minutes or so. And actually, the one that's in your packet was prepared last night. We got the revenue estimate on the Dabney bill, House File 2750, this morning at about 9 o'clock. And so the pages will hand out a new version that has the numbers on the grid for the Dabney bill as well. So just to quickly go through the grid, the first entries on the top of it indicate that the caps on the tax credits in each of the bills. So there are three basic bills, the House File 1136 and House File 1194 are both the 2008 governor's bill, so they're identical. And then there's the Lincheski grant bill, House File 2580, and then the Dabney tax credit bill, House File 2750. If you look across the grid, you can see for each of the fiscal years the maximum tax credits that are permitted under the three different proposals. The governor's bill has $3 million per year, and that's actually divided, I believe, $2 million to funds and $1 million to individual investors. The Lincheski grant bill for 11 has $11 million, whereas the Dabney bill has $10 million. Then it's 14, 10, 15, 12. And the only bill that has ongoing specified cap is the Dabney bill, which has a $12 million ongoing authorized amount of credits. The next set of rows on the grid are the Department of Revenue's estimate of how much this will reduce state tax revenues. On the governor's bill, because there's a delay, which I'll get to in a minute in how that credit works, in the first two fiscal years there's no cost, and in the third fiscal year, fiscal year 13, there's a $1.5 million cost. By contrast, the Lincheski grant bill actually results in savings of $800,000 in the first fiscal year, and that's because it has an offsetting change in the corporate apportionment formula. Then it has savings again in the second year of $2.9 million and a cost of $2.3 million. So over the forecast window, there's a slight increase in revenue. Finally, on the House File 2750, the Dabney bill. I don't have the updated grid in front of me, so I'm doing this from memory. I think it's $7.5 million, $8.5 million in those first two fiscal years. The next row shows the grant or credit rate for the various different proposals. Both of the credit bills, the governor's bill and Representative Dabney's bill, thanks, has the... I have credit rates of 25%. The grant rate is a third. Now, that's a little bit confusing because the credit rate is applied to the gross amount of the investment, whereas the grant is given on top of the investment. So that 33% rate, although it looks a little more generous, is actually not that generous if they're compared on an equivalent basis. The maximum credit per investor is $100,000 for individuals under the governor's bill, $500,000 per fund. The grant maximum is the same in the Lincheski bill as that, $100,000. The Dabney bill has $125,000 maximum. The maximum credit that any one business can receive under the governor's bill is $500,000. The same under the grant bill, $500,000. Under House File 2750, the Dabney bill, that maximum that any one business can receive in credits is $1 million. That you won't see that $1 million number in the bill. I derived that by multiplying the 25% credit rate times the maximum $4 million that the total amount of investment in a business can qualify for the credit. Holding periods. The governor's original bill had a 3-year holding period, and the key thing about that is that the investor had to wait the 3 years to actually claim the credit. So they'd make the investment in year one, but they would only reduce their taxes in the third year, and that's why you saw the difference in the cost of the governor's bill versus the other two bills. The grant bill has no holding period at all, but it does have a four-year requirement that if the business essentially fails to continue to meet the qualification requirements, that then the grant has to be repaid. The House File 2750, the Dabney bill, has the three-year holding period, but there's no delay in the credit. The credit's given up front, but then the investor is required to maintain their investment for a three-year period, and there are a number of provisions in the bill that allow outs for that. So, for example, if the stock starts to trade on a public exchange, then you can sell it. If you sell the entire business, then the three-year holding period doesn't apply, and so forth. Who are the eligible investors? Basically, the bills are essentially the same on this. They're either individuals who qualify under the Securities and Exchange Commission's Regulation D, which is basically high net worth or high income individuals, which you can see on the grid, the dollar amounts of those, or business entities that qualify under that. So it's, you know, it's banks, insurance companies, and other small business investment corporations and so forth. And under the under all of the bills, funds that are pools of investors that meet those requirements but then invest on a fund basis also qualify. Under the governor's bill and under the Lincheski grant bill, those funds have to have at least five investors. The one difference in the Dabney bill is they only have to have three investors. Investment diversification requirements. This is only a feature of the governor's bill, and that, and it relates largely to, first, the funds. The bill allows certification of 20 of these funds. No more than five of them can invest in the seven county Twin Cities metro area, and no more than three funds can invest. There's a typo in that, should say more than 15 counties. And then the governor also has a requirement that at least half of the investments have to be in green businesses. There are no similar requirements in either the grant bill or the Dabney bill. Certification of investors. The governor's bill requires that investors be certified by deed. The Lincheski bill does not require this. The Dabney bill also requires certification of investors. So investors will have to apply to deed to be certified in order to claim the credit. The qualified small business on the grid where it says QSB, that's an acronym that refers to qualified small businesses, which is the targeted entity that qualifies for the credit when you make an angel investment. Minnesota requirements, this is the same across all the bills. They require the company to be headquartered in Minnesota, to have 51% of its employees in Minnesota, and to have 51% of its payroll in Minnesota. Turning to the other side, going further down which businesses are eligible for these investments, there are size limits. Under the governor's bill, there was a maximum of 99 employees. They have to have less than $2 million in annual gross receipts, can't receive more than $2 million in private equity investment, and you haven't received more investments than qualify for a $500,000 tax credit. Under both the Lincheski grant bill and the Dabney tax credit bill, the number of employees is lower than under the governor's bill. It's less than 25, so the business could not have more than 24 employees. Can't be part of a unitary business that has more than 100 employees. And under the Lincheski bill, it has the same gross sales requirement or gross receipts requirement that the governor's bill has. The Dabney bill does not have that feature. And finally, they can't have received more than $2 million in private equity investment. And under the Lincheski bill, that includes the grant, whereas under the tax credit bills, it implicitly includes the tax credit because that's taken off by the investor and doesn't affect the dollar amount of the tax credit. Age restrictions. These businesses cannot have operated more than 10 consecutive years. That's the same across all three bills. All three bills have minimum pay requirements for the employees after the first employees, and basically it requires that they pay them 175% of the poverty level for a family of four. The governor's bill also has a restriction on a sort of second tier of employees that's a little more complicated that he didn't put in the grid. The line of business restrictions, the governor's bill specifies a list: biotech, technology, manufacturing, agriculture, processing or assembling products, so any manufacturer would qualify, conducting R&D, developing new products or business processes, and then there's secondly a second category of production of green and renewable energy, green services, and so forth. The Linchesky grant bill is basically uses the same set of criteria as the governor's bill. The House File 2750, the Dabney bill, has a narrower set of qualifying criteria. The business must be engaged in or committed to engage in innovation in either of any of three areas: a qualified high technology field, researching, developing, or producing proprietary technology for the tourism, forestry, mining, or transportation industries, or green manufacturing. On reporting requirements, the governor's bill has no reporting requirements. The Linchesky bill has an annual report to the legislature on the amount of investment, businesses, employees, and so forth. And the Dabney bill has more detailed reporting requirements each year. The business and the investors, after they qualify for the credit for 3 years, have to file an annual report, and there's an annual report required to the legislature. I won't go through the certification fees. They vary a little bit by the bills, $250 to $1,000, depending upon the characteristics, and all of those directly appropriate that money to DEED for its operations, so this would not go through the normal appropriation process. Finally, on the transferability of the credit, the governor's original bill did not allow for transfer of the credit. The grant bill, obviously, that has no need to transfer the credit because the grant's paid as cash. The Dabney bill does allow transfer the credit once, but to qualify for that transfer, the individual cannot have paid Minnesota tax for 3 years before they make the transfer. So I think this would be targeted pretty much exclusively to out-of-state investors that have never paid or that don't generally pay Minnesota tax. So that's sort of a thumbnail of the differences among the three bills.
Thank you, Mr. Michaels. Members, I'm going to ask if Representative Dabney would like to come to the witness table and say a few words, but we've got about 20 minutes now for author's comments. Hopefully they're relatively brief, and then that 20 minutes I'd like to include the testifiers. And at about 11:15, I'm going to cut off the testifying and open it up to questions from the committee. So, Representative Dabney.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Michaels, for the review of the different bills. I appreciate the opportunity to present the Angel Investor Tax Credit today, and I appreciate the growing number of members of the Tax Committee, the Bioscience Committee, and the Small Business Caucus who have signed on to this initiative as co-authors. Historically, Minnesota has had a very competitive economy nationally and internationally. We were are home to more Fortune 500 headquarters than our population, location, or frankly climate would predict. We've had been a home of a vibrant technology development industry, both computers and biomedical devices in particular. Our workers have enjoyed above average wages and living conditions, and Minnesotans have worked hard, innovated, and invested in a strong educational system. That was the Minnesota of my parents and the Minnesota of my youth. Unfortunately, that's much less true today. Others will come forward and testify to their personal challenges of starting new, small, innovative businesses in Minnesota today. Suffice it to say that where Minnesota once led, we now lag. The Angel Investor Tax Credit is targeted at new businesses, small businesses with less than 25 employees, emerging businesses, those with less than $2 million in private equity investments, those businesses developing new technology in a wide variety of fields, and where 51% or more of their payroll and employees are here in Minnesota. By implementing the Angel Investor Tax Credit, I believe we can build on the historic strengths of Minnesota, position Minnesota again to compete nationally and internationally, incent homegrown, successful investors here across the state to invest both their capital and their business acumen with the next generation of business ideas and leaders. We can increase the likelihood that these new businesses that are born here will stay and grow, growing businesses, opportunities, and jobs. We'll enhance the entrepreneurial climate across the state, leverage the state's legacy of investment in the University of Minnesota, allow the market and savvy investors to determine the best ideas out there for new businesses, and help seed high-paying jobs and improve tax revenues. We've been lucky to develop great support from the Minnesota business community. In your packet is some evidence of that. In addition, members, there's a map that indicates beginning of support from across the state and illustrates that well. And I have here letters and petitions signed by 119 business leaders from across the state, as well as statements of support from a number of statewide business organizations in a variety of industries, including nanotech, green, food, medical technology, and software, and the support of statewide business groups, including the Minnesota Business Partnership, Life Science Alley, EDM, the BioBusiness Alliance, the Minnesota Chamber, and others. With that, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, you have a list of testifiers, and I would like to defer to them to bring forward their experience as business leaders in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Dabney. I think Representative Downing, did you have...
Bend your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I know you've got my name on the testifier list, and also... the bill that I carried for the governor last year in your packet. I actually have signed on to Representative Dabney's bill. I think that the mechanics within it, the mechanisms, the provisions that they've worked out over the summer are very strong. I think the definitions of qualified businesses are much more wide open. We're not picking winners and losers. We're allowing the investment community to do that. So with the good hard work of Representative Mahoney and Representative Dabney over the interim, I'm very comfortable signing on to that bill and won't be aggressively pushing the bill that I carried last time. So I just want to offer my support for the Dabney bill.
Thank you, Representative Downey. Chair Lincheski.
I guess I'd like to not go into the detail of my bill since I think Mr. Michael covered all the bills, but I'd rather you make sure we have time after we hear from testifiers to actually go through the report that Mr. Michael prepared for all of us. Members of the Bioscience Committee may not, you know, may do things a little differently than the Tax Committee, but I think it was last summer, I'm not sure, I asked Mr. Michael in House Research, and it's House Research staff from Bioscience and Mr. Michael from Taxes who worked to answer a couple questions. Do we have a venture capital problem in Minnesota? And do these things that other states do work to improve venture capital investment? And so we've got that report. It came out yesterday. I was telling Representative Mahoney, Chair Mahoney, that I got up this morning early and made my coffee to read the study. And so it's in everyone's packet. But I do hope we'll spend some time on it because I think those questions, I think the information now is it's folks I think will be quite interested to see if this should be a top priority of the Minnesota legislature right now. And I think we owe it to all of us to take a good look at the data and understand there's very limited data, but there is some, and our nonpartisan staff has reviewed it for us. So I'd like to make sure we have time for that today.
Well, thank you, Chair Lincheski. Then why don't we go to some of the testifiers, and I will, Mr. Dabney, I think you had Mac Lewis, and we'll do it in this order. Mac Lewis, Tim Mulcahy, and Jay Herr. Oh, wait. Mac Lewis, Harry Norris, Norris, Tim Mulcahy, and Jay Herr. And members, again, or to the testifiers, I will tell you, if people have already testified to your your particular issue, you might want to come up and say, I support it, I think it's a great idea, my things have been said, and then we'll get to questions, because I'm kind of nervous about this tax committee. Heard stories. Mr. Lewis, if you could identify yourself for the tape.
Mac Lewis, I think I'm here because I'm out where the rubber meets the road. I've started three businesses. I've been an angel investor in businesses, and I wanted to go through that background a little bit and offer some comments. A serial entrepreneur, three startup companies, raising money for these three companies. I started first company when I was in my 30s. I didn't know what I didn't know about business at that time. Fortunately, I got financing and good advice from angel investors. And I would want to emphasize the mentoring aspect of angel investors along with the financial aspects that you talked about. Second startup, I was a CEO, was pre-revenue company. We took the company public, created over 400 jobs, and was quite a successful company. I took some time off to be an investor, and in 2007, several years ago, I started a third company. I'm full-time CEO. It's making good progress even in this difficult climate. We added 40 new customers last year and grew 40%. We've just closed on investment from some local angel investors, but I'd point out that round isn't completed yet. So a successful entrepreneur who's done several businesses, has a high profile, has been an investor himself, is having trouble raising money. Since the mid-90s, I've been an active angel investor and venture investor in Minnesota. I put together two small venture funds from other people, invested my own money. And in 2006, I joined with some other angel investors as a member of the First Twin Cities Angel Fund, which I think you've heard about. I served on boards of over 12 companies, early-stage companies, in that time frame. Most of them became venture-backed during that period. To me, the essence of angel investors is for those who have experience as well as access to investment cash and other resources to provide help for next-generation entrepreneurs. I've raised money in the 80s, 90s, and now the 2000s. During the period 96 to 2006, I was an active investor. Over the span of more than 25 years, it's gotten more and more difficult to raise money for Minnesota companies. I'd like to emphasize this point. It is now, without question, the most difficult period I've ever seen to raise money for early-stage companies. In the mid-80s, there were more Minnesota-based venture firms and investment banking firms than there are today. And in the 80s, most of them got involved in private investing for early-stage companies, and they identified the fact that they would participate in seed-stage investments. There are now fewer firms, and none of them invest in early-stage companies. There are various reasons for this, not necessarily unique to Minnesota, including the collapse of the IPO market, the public offering market, and the venture industry is still working off the excesses of the dot-com boom in the late 1990s. In addition, I think Minnesota has its own issues. Our state capital gains tax is high enough to drive prospective angel investors out of state when they retire, rather than being here where they can help get companies started. Suffice it to say, this is a very bad funding market. There's little early stage investment capital in Minnesota, and while things are tight in most of the country, early stage investing is still happening more easily in other parts of the country. We have a problem getting startup companies funded here in Minnesota. An angel tax credit can make a difference in getting more angel investors involved helping early stage companies. Why would this be good for Minnesota? Some startup companies grow into big companies. This creates jobs, experience, and wealth that contributes to our community, our quality of life, and can help ensure Minnesota will have the public and private resources we need, or that we all need, to provide for our future generations. Angel tax credits can help motivate and support angel investment and get more early stage companies started. Let's remember we enjoy a great diversified business environment in Minnesota. This has been built on the past success of market-leading companies. Without successful startups, future market-leading companies will not be based in Minnesota. We in Minnesota are at serious risk of not having a healthy state economy in the next as early as 5, 10, or 15 years. Every community builds on the success of homegrown companies that succeed and prosper. Initial market-leading companies in Minnesota include the timber companies, followed by grain milling, with industrial engines from companies like Pillsbury and General Mills. 3M and Honeywell were early technology leaders in our communities, and then in the 60s, 70s, we had a generation of mainframe computer companies with Univac, Control Data, and Cray Research. More recently, our medical technology community has grown based on the success of Medtronic, St. Jude, SciMed, and others. Each startup that becomes a real market leader contributes to the community in many ways. I'd like to emphasize, we don't have many of these starting and getting to that Fortune 500 rank these days. They obviously create jobs, they train employees, some of these employees start other companies in Minnesota, and they create wealth. Investors and employees of these companies make money and they invest it back in the community. They become angel investors and mentors for the next generation of startup companies. This is the business hosting environment we hope to create with the angel investor tax credit. We're not starting enough of these next generation companies in Minnesota, and our community will need them. The angel tax credit can help. Considerations as I see it in favor of the angel tax credit, it fills a critical gap. Right now, pre-revenue companies can't get banking financing, and venture funding is not stepping down to the level of the startup companies. These credits are being offered in other states, including the states surrounding us. Data I've been given says 18 other states have angel tax credits. I know of companies that have moved to Wisconsin in order to get funding from angels in that state. With more companies getting started, angel tax credits can have a multiplier effect. More support for entrepreneurs, more focus by venture capital in Minnesota startups, and create learning curve and role models for entrepreneurs so they'll start other companies. And there's really no reason not to do it. The lost tax revenue is more than covered by increased payroll taxes. Let me talk about some examples there. An angel investment of $1 million might have a tax credit of $250,000. This gets leveraged by follow-on public and private investments which do not get the tax credit. This year, my company, which just got started two and a half years ago, will account for over $60,000 in Minnesota state payroll taxes. I was an angel investor in a company called Ziotech, which started in 1995. The founders of that company, my friend, started a company called Compellent, which started in 2002, 7 years ago. Compellent now has about 400 employees, of which approximately 30 are based in Minnesota. I'd estimate they pay over $2 million in Minnesota state income taxes annually each year. Compared to a tax credit of $250,000, this is an 8 times payback each year. These are returns that venture capitalists would die for. We need to create that opportunity. Minnesota lost tax credit to other worthwhile endeavors, energy efficient activities, affordable housing, low income families, tuition to schools, and corporations for R&D. I encourage you to offer tax credits to angels who help build startup companies that create high wage jobs. The jobs created by startup companies will more than cover the cost of the angel tax credit with their state income tax, and more importantly, this is part of the investments that needed for Minnesota's immediate future to ensure this community is healthy and growing, to help create a robust economy with interesting and well-paying jobs for the next generation of Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Mr. Norris.
Good morning.
Mr. Norris, good morning. Could you identify yourself for the tape?
Certainly. I'm Harry Norris, CEO of Rapid Diagnostics, based in Hudson, Wisconsin. Thank you, Mac, for that good summary. I'm going to try to focus my remarks on the practicalities of running a company. Particularly as Matt described, a startup early stage development company. We're a development stage company developing a unique biosensor that does a blood test in 60 seconds on a one-step direct sampling basis in a $150 cell phone size device. It's transformational. Think of an iPod that's able to do a diagnostic test in 1 minute or less. We started the company in 2008 on raising $1.3 million capital out of Wisconsin, largely due to the angel investment tax credit, and we moved from St. Paul to Hudson, Wisconsin as a result. In my first discussion relating to this, having lived in Shorewood the last 20 years, exactly 50 miles from the Hudson office, I engaged Kathy Salzman about the issue we faced. I come out of Medtronic and Johnson, large medical device companies. But I can tell you, as CEO of an early-stage company, access to capital is the number one issue. Just this morning at 7 o'clock, I had an investor meeting here in Minneapolis trying to raise additional funds. We're in the process of raising Round B capital. We've closed on $1.5 million of a $4 million Round B, and all of that money came out of Wisconsin angel investors. A week from today, we meet with Wisconsin Investment Partners in Madison for an ongoing discussion for more funds with them. So this early stage capital is absolutely critical to startup. That's probably 80% of my job on a daily basis, not managing technology milestones, but raising money and keeping the payroll coming in. So I know, because we had to move to Wisconsin to get it funded. I'm supportive of the investment tax credit over grants for the following reasons. Credits incent angel investors to get into investing. Perfect example, investment credit, angel-backed company in Wisconsin, recently was acquired by GenProbe. Several financial returns on that are now interested in my company. The former CEO of that company is interested in being an investor. So angel tax credit creates more angel investment opportunity, just as Mr. Lewis described. Angels provide ongoing investment counsel, mentoring, and ongoing investment contacts, board positions, and bringing in other angel investors. When an angel investor invested in Rapid Diagnostics, a PhD from Madison came down and spent 6 hours grilling us on technical due diligence, everything from monoclonal antibody adherence to the sensor and other technical issues. I have no idea how the government through grants could accomplish technical due diligence and make wise investment decisions, and that's the level of due diligence an angel will do. Other resources abound with the Wisconsin tax credit. They have early planning grants, online applications, and within a week I got a $3,000 grant to help fund an NIH grant to the government. So there's an entire system surrounding the Wisconsin Angel Tax Investment scheme as well. It's not just the tax credit. That's why they're seeing the growth that they're seeing. Different individuals, if you want to get an investor that's really interested in making a company successful, they need to have skin in the game. Success in the small startup world comes from intensity, accountability, and ownership, and that's what yields excellence. And again, investors in the form of an angel tax credit versus grants from the state, which is going to be riddled, in my opinion, with bureaucracy, process, and relationships that take it off an investment path that it needs to be on for success. So my closing remark is, let's keep Minnesota strong. Let's keep Minnesota biotechnology where it belongs, at home. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Norris. In the interest of time, and as I try to keep as much time for questions and any other comments, I'm going to read some of the organizations that are here to testify if they would like. If things have been said already, or if you'd like to just come down and say that your organization supports it, it might keep us on time. Vice President Mulcahy from the University of Minnesota, Jay Herr from PricewaterhouseCooper. I'm just going to read the names of the organizations, and then maybe you can or cannot come down if you choose. The Economic Development Association of Minnesota, DiaServe of Blooming Prairie, the Minnesota High Tech Association, Minnesota Business Partnership, the Isaac Project, Itasca, I'm sorry, different group. Oh, they both have the same principle, a better Minnesota. Rain Source Capital, Twin City Angels, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, Biobusiness Alliance of Minnesota, and the Life Science Alley. So if any of those would like to come down briefly, I'm going to extend this for about 10 minutes, but otherwise we're going to get to questions by the members as soon as we can. So if any of those wanted to say a few words very quickly. I guess Mr. Vice President Mulcahy is heading towards the table. Identify yourself for the tape and quickly. You've heard me say that before, haven't you?
My name is Tim Mulcahy. I'm the Vice President for Research at the University of Minnesota. I want to share with the committee that I am neither a tax expert nor a personal investor, but a Minnesotan concerned about the state's lagging position in the innovation economy. One thing I can tell you is that an investment tax credit public policy is an essential element in an entrepreneurial ecosystem, one that's lacking in the state of Minnesota. A recent review we did of policies at 28 other states indicated that the vast majority, I believe it was 25 plus, all have in place angel tax credit policies which incent investment in technologies and relocation of companies in those states. I will tell you that whatever you decide in whichever program you follow, whatever Minnesota offers has to be competitive and competitive with the states nearby. We've had a number of companies that we've spun out of the university who have moved to Wisconsin, as you've heard Mr. North already mention, because they can access tax credit advantages in that state. If they leave the state because they want to work with somebody at the University of Minnesota, on the University of Wisconsin, shame on the University of Minnesota. They leave the state to go as far as Hudson to access Angel tax credits. I would say shame on the state of Minnesota for not offering a similar opportunity here. One of the most important things I think about this is that angel investors are personal investors who are assuming very, very big risk in early stage technology development. The risk is personal. I believe the incentive must be personal as well. And finally, I would just quote a contemporary celebrity who said, follow the money. Bottom line is, that's exactly what small companies in Minnesota are doing. They're following the money to other states. And I would just encourage you to look at this very seriously and to take every action you can to make Minnesota competitive again in this arena. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mulcahy. Are there any other testifiers? Ms. Lindsay, if you could identify yourself for the tape.
Certainly. I'm Joy Lindsay. I'm president and co-founder of StarTech Investments. StarTech is a small private venture capital firm located in Bloomington. We have invested, we started the company in 1998 and have invested in 18 Minnesota companies, startup companies, since that time, and also invested in other venture capital funds that and have invested in companies as well. I am also part of the Sophia Angel Fund, which is a group of 30 women who have organized under Rain Source Capital and provide funding to women-run, women-led companies. I'm here also representing Minnesota High Tech Association. I have the fortune of being the chair of the board of directors this year. And hopefully you have seen the support that MHTA has been able to generate. In just a few days, we received signatures from over 120 participants of the 350 member companies, strong support for the Angel Tax Credit. Another group that I'm here supporting is called Mojo Minnesota. And this is a grassroots effort to get innovation restarted again in the state of Minnesota. And so I'd just like to spend 1 minute from a venture capital perspective about what's changed in the state since 1998. When we started our company, there were, I would say, 10 at least other small venture firms who did startup investments in companies. If you go to the list from the Business Journal of the top 25 venture funds today, there aren't even 25 companies listed. So, and two of them, I believe, are organized under Rain Source Capital. So the state of venture capital has changed, and we really need angel investors and angel funds to fill that gap of seed and startup money, because it doesn't exist anywhere else. So I would just strongly encourage you to support this bill. I would also encourage you to make it as broad as possible, and I appreciate the comments that were made earlier that we don't want to necessarily pick winners and losers, industries, size of companies, that type of thing. So I would appreciate that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lindsay. Come right ahead. Now, you've got about 5 more minutes, and then I'm going to, like I say, open it up to questions.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and members. My name is Gary Noble from Dyserv Incorporated and Bioplastic Solutions, LLC, down in Blooming Prairie, Minnesota. The only follow-on comment that I'd like to share is that we've been looking for funding for about 2 years, right in that vicinity. We are finding the access to people of interest more on the coast than here in Minnesota. In the next 12 months, we will look to close our first round. But if I accept the ones that I have got at the table right now, this company that we started 6 to 10 years ago, because there's two pieces of the company, won't exist in Minnesota, I can guarantee it. The funds that are available that are out on the coast wants the businesses at the coast as well. So if we accept these funds, then we're going to be pushing ourselves in that direction. Because once you take the money, you're listening to your investors. So I encourage you to really look to help these people like Joy's group and others to find ways to keep the money that we have in Minnesota here in Minnesota. It will put the employees that we've got in a more sustainable organization and grow us to the next level. So I support this bill fully, and I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Got to make sure I get the name right. Mr. Knowles. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, my name is Scott Marquardt. I'm the president of the Economic Development Association of Minnesota, or EDAM. We're a nonprofit association of more than 500 professionals from the private, public, and nonprofit sectors throughout the state who are dedicated to the advancement of the economic development profession, and I'm pleased to be joined by a number of our members in the audience today. Each year, EDAM develops legislative policies that are shaped by our members' unique experiences and understanding of the tools and tactics that are most effective in positioning and marketing Minnesota as a location for corporate, small business, housing, and community development. In our 2000 legislative policies, we support the passage of renewable energy and bioscience investment initiatives that include an angel investment tax credit. We believe that strong efforts such as the angel investment tax credit are needed to attract the investment capital needed to grow the green, bioscience, and other high-tech job opportunities in our state and to help keep Minnesota competitive with other states and, more importantly, in a global economy. Angel investment tax credits have demonstrated success in other states like Ohio and Wisconsin, as we've heard, to increase investment in startups and to be a catalyst for the creation of local funds and investors willing to make these important investments in local companies. The Center for Venture Research at the University of New Hampshire published its findings from their first half of 2009, and they continue to state that angel investments continue to be a significant contributor to job growth. Also, one other statistic that we think is important, according to the Angel Capital Association, the Center for Venture Research estimates that U.S. angel investors invested $19 billion in about 55,000 deals or 35,000 small businesses in 2008, and many of these investments were in startup or early stage companies. Again, on behalf of the board and members of EDAM, we support the creation of this important economic development tool, as we believe it will help Minnesota continue its long history of entrepreneurship and innovation, lead to the creation and retention of high-quality jobs, help us seize the opportunities in bioscience, energy, high-tech, manufacturing, and other high-potential sectors, and be the catalyst for investment to keep us competitive in a global economy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marquardt. One more? Please identify yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chair, I'm Don Gearhart, CEO of Life Science Alley, Minnesota-based trade association in the life sciences. Just a couple of very short comments for the group. We have over 600, actually about 620 member companies as of right now. We have been working hopefully and tirelessly on this particular approach to investment in the United States, in the state, for 6 years. We cannot thank you more for this hearing and then the action that's needed to be taken. It's extremely important that we feed these small companies because they are going away. There is no doubt. You've heard that already. I won't repeat that, but our support is strong. We appreciate those of you that are bringing the bills forward and look forward to talking with you in the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Garrett. Representative Lenteski, Chair Lenteski, did you want Mr. Michaels to come back? And if Mr. Michaels is in the audience, I'm sure he is, but... Members, the room is empty at 12, so if we run over a little bit, we'll run over a little bit. I know we're trying to get about 45 minutes for two questions. But Mr. Michaels, apparently the Chair Lenteski would like you to...
Yes, if I may. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think maybe, I don't know if I miscommunicated. I had hoped initially when Mr. Michael reported to us about the bills, we would have sort of the background that the tax committee is used to getting on kind of these big picture pieces, and maybe since it's running so late, Mr. Michael can try to do a modified version of his report. But it's in members' packets. It's the one I read this morning, and it's a study on, you know, do we have a problem in venture capital, and are the competitors out there who have these tax subsidies beating us somehow? And one of the reasons I asked Mr. Michael to take a look at this, and again, I just saw it this morning, is there's a lot of assertions from folks in this issue without any evidence. And so I continue to be frustrated as I meet with people, and they all have an anecdote of a story to tell of somebody who's moved away, yet the papers report, don't, you know, report about all the venture capital that's happening right now anyhow without a credit in Minnesota. And we all see the newspaper articles. Somebody just passed one out, Representative Coles, of someone who might leave. You know, there's, you know, I could have brought all the ones of all the ones who've come and all the venture capital that's taking place without a credit. And so I felt, this is a big issue for tax committee members because it's a tax subsidy to those in Minnesota who earn over $300,000. I mean, this isn't, people need to think through, because we care a lot about progressivity in the tax committee and who's getting tax breaks. And, you know, of course, we have to figure out how to pay for this because it's either going to be paid for with cuts to other Minnesotans or a tax increase. And if anyone can identify which one of those the governor would sign, please let me know. But it is a tax subsidy to those who earn over $300,000 a year, and folks need to think long and hard about this. So I tried to open my mind after sort of fighting with you all for so long to say, you know what, if there's a huge venture capital problem in Minnesota, I want evidence. And unfortunately, what I think I learned in this process is there isn't a lot of data out there. But I did ask the nonpartisan staff, Representative Mahoney's committee staff and this committee staff, to take a look at any objective, not paid for by the industry, data on what is happening in venture capital in the country. And it is true, it's down in Minnesota, it's down in the whole country because of the economy. But if we could just hear for a few minutes what the objective data states about what is the situation in the country and in Minnesota and Wisconsin, I think people might be a little interested to really get their heads around this. And I actually have to be honest, I didn't read it again, like I said, till this morning, and I'm even more concerned now. Even more concerned when we look at kind of the fact that we're about, you know, 3 to 8 times better off in the amount of venture capital in Minnesota than Wisconsin right now. And the story appears for most people that we're behind. That's not what the data shows at all. And the data shows when you remove California and Massachusetts from the nation, we're right at the top. So I think, you know, we do need a few minutes for members to sort of step back from their positions here and look at data. And if others have more that they can give us, we want it, because what's out there is proprietary and it's difficult to get. So in reading the study or in the paper, Mr. Michaels had to rely on the only one that's out there that's public. So that's all there is. And we want more. The tax committee wants more. But I do want folks to just, you know, just for a second, step back and understand where we stand in the state according to the data we've got, or in the nation. So if Mr. Michael can do it in a quick way, it'd be helpful.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, all the document that's is in your packet looks like this. And first, as a caveat, I would not characterize this as a study, contrary to
paper.
The chair. Basically, what we did was to simply do two things at the request of the tax committee chair. One was to compile as much data as we could get our hands on venture capital in Minnesota, and that's the first half of the paper that's in your packet. And then secondly, because there's this issue about what's the best way to structure providing an incentive to the venture capital industry, is it better to do that as a tax credit or is it better to do it as a grant? The second half of the paper goes through and discusses the advantages and disadvantages of those two different approaches. I won't spend a lot of time. People, obviously, if they're interested in this, can read it, but what I'll, and it's fairly long, unfortunately, it's, I think, 28 pages. So I won't dwell on a lot of this, but I'll just try to point out a few things. And a lot of the discussion, that which I guess you've just heard, focuses on this Minnesota versus Wisconsin comparison. And so in compiling this information, we tried to sort of compare Minnesota and Wisconsin. Wisconsin, as I suspect some of you know, has a real panoply of incentives for capital and for venture capital specifically. You've heard discussion here about their angel credit. They have a complementary credit called the early stage seed credit that's provided to funds, which in the Minnesota bill, it's sort of balled together with Angel Credit, but in Wisconsin they have two separate credits, plus they have a Capco credit for venture capital. And you also heard one person testify about Minnesota's capital gain rate. Minnesota taxes capital gain income like ordinary income. Wisconsin has had a long-standing policy of allowing a 60% exclusion for capital gain income, which last session the Wisconsin legislature cut in half, so it's not quite as generous as it was. So Wisconsin's got three upfront incentives and a back-end incentive for capital, whereas Minnesota has been very parsimonious. Although I will say, in some ways, as Yogi Berra said, for me this is deja vu all over again, because in the early 80s, early in my career here, I spent literally hundreds of hours working on a tax credit that Minnesota enacted in 1983, two tax credits to stimulate venture capital, and we spent the committee at the time, which was chaired by then Representative Randy Kelly. We spent a lot of time working with the Minnesota venture capital industry to design a Minnesota credit to encourage venture capital, because at that time there was a very large concern that Minnesota was sort of lagging, and this would be a way, of course that was in the last big recession period, to stimulate job growth in Minnesota. And for a period of time in the middle 80s, Minnesota did have a couple of venture capital credit incentives that were repealed by the legislature in 1987. So this is not totally new to Minnesota. It's been done in Minnesota before. But just to turn, what we did was there are actually two sources of data that we were able to find out there with regard to venture capital. One of them, the Dow Jones Venture Source, you have to be a subscriber and pay for access to the data, and so we did not use it. But if you look in Appendix B in the report, we found in a Brookings Institution paper an instance where they printed a table that had like 5 years worth of Minnesota and Wisconsin venture capital. The data does not match up with the source that we did use exactly, but the relationship between Minnesota and Wisconsin is pretty consistent. But you can look at the table in Appendix B and see the difference between the two data sources. They bounce around a little bit, but the relationship between Minnesota and Wisconsin is pretty much the same. I guess the first thing I would, so anyway, what we used was the Price Waterhouse data that's prepared. It's called the Money Tree Report, which is done in conjunction with the National Venture Capital Association. And that data source is available since 1995, so we've got a period of 15 years, 1995 through 2009. We took that data and calculated per capita amounts for both Minnesota, Wisconsin, and the North Central region, which is the region that includes Minnesota and Wisconsin. This also includes the states of Iowa, Nebraska, North, and South Dakota. And if you look on page 5, you can see those dollar amounts for each. The Price Waterhouse data is broken down by four stages. Startup seed stage, that's the very first stage, and that would be the relevant category here for angel investment. Some of it may lop over into the early stage. And then there's an expansion stage and a later stage. They also have a buyout stage, which does not have any entries for Minnesota or Wisconsin in the periods that I looked at anyway. So that's not included. So anyway, this table with all the small numbers provides the per capita amounts for Minnesota, Wisconsin, and the North Central region for each of the years. Now, it's pretty hard to digest all of that information from the table, but if you look at it, in every year, Minnesota is higher and substantially higher on a per capita basis than Wisconsin or the region for every year and every stage. And it's not a small margin. It's a fairly substantial margin. If you turn to the next page, let me say one more thing about this data set. Obviously, none of us in house research are experts on venture capital, don't know much about the industry. I think it's fairly likely that a bunch of angel investment, by its very nature, because these are isolated individuals making investments, does not sort of get captured by this database. But on the other hand, we don't have any reason to believe that Minnesota's data is sort of overreported compared to Wisconsin's or any other. We just don't have any basis for that. So with that caveat that this likely doesn't reflect some financings that are going on, that's probably the case. And when you compare the Dow Jones data with the Price Waterhouse data, you can see they're shown with different numbers. So obviously some of them are capturing some and some are not capturing others, but we just don't have any basis for thinking that, you know, it's unreliable or that it's skewed toward one state or another. But if you turn to page 6, we put the total amounts in a graph so you can see the relative Wisconsin, Minnesota, and regional amounts. The regions between Minnesota and Wisconsin, obviously, probably for the reason that Minnesota pulls the regional numbers up from what Wisconsin is. So basically, the picture from that is that Minnesota's venture capital, that Minnesota, based on this data source, has quite a bit more venture capital than Wisconsin or the other states in this north central region. But then, of course, the next question, and as you heard folks testify, hey, the coasts are where the action is. You know, Minnesota's not doing very well nationally. So then we compared on a national basis how Minnesota does with the nation. And if you look on then we put that in the bar graph, which is figure 2 on page 7. And if you look, the line that's drawn across, that's the 100% line. So if Minnesota was exactly at the national average, the bars would hit that line. So you can see Minnesota's quite a bit below the average in most years. There's a few years when it's above, and those tended to be early in this period, which is consistent sort of with the message that you were getting from some of the testifiers. And since then, we've been lower, although recently we've been doing better. We particularly did bad during the boom years, during the 90s and 2000, when venture capital was, you know, available everywhere. But, of course, the standard wisdom on venture capital is that it's really heavily concentrated in a couple of places on the coast. So, and in particular, everybody talks about Silicon Valley, which is the real hotbed for venture capital, and the Boston area. So to put this in a little bit better perspective, what we did was we did a comparison with the nation if we took out California and Massachusetts. And if you turn the next page to page 8, figure 3 shows that. And this changes the picture quite dramatically. And I think that is because there is so much venture capital in particularly California and Massachusetts. Once you take out California and Massachusetts, then Minnesota looks actually pretty good relative to the nation. There's only one year when we're below the national average, and most years we're above. For this whole period, we're 47% above the national average. The third way that we tried to sort of do a comparison of this was to look at national rankings. Obviously, that's, you know, in the tax business, you always do these rankings to see where Minnesota ranks on a per capita basis, and that's in Table 2 on page 9. And this, four of these columns are based on absolute numbers, which I would sort of advise you not to look much at, because it sort of treats Wyoming the same way as New York or Alaska, the same as California. And obviously, there's, you know, treating each of those as an observation isn't very sensible. So the per capita numbers are the ones to look at, which is in the middle column for Minnesota and the far right column for Wisconsin. And you can see on average over this 15-year period, Minnesota ranked 10th nationally, Wisconsin ranked 32nd nationally. If you look at the states that rank above us, obviously it's California and Massachusetts are always there, but you'll also find some of the other New England states consistently being there. New Hampshire's there, Connecticut's there, and I think the reason for that, and Rhode Island shows up there too, and I think one of the reasons for that is there's a spillover effect from the Boston area. I mean, New England is really more like a small state in a sense than comparable to sort of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, etc., and also Washington State, which has obviously Microsoft, Amazon.com, and a whole bunch of other companies, also is always in the top rank, and Colorado also does very well. So those are the states that consistently are above Minnesota in these rankings. So that's basically all I want to talk about in terms of the sort of the overall picture about Minnesota and the venture capital nationally. The next part of the report sort of tries to go through and discuss a little bit about whether there's evidence that the Wisconsin's enactment of the credits, they enacted their angel credit and their early stage credit in the early part of the last decade. The Capco credit was enacted in the late 90s. And so we put some data together to see whether that affected the trend. Is venture capital growing faster in Wisconsin than it is in Minnesota because Wisconsin enacted those credits in the late 90s and the early 2000s. On the Capco credit, which is a credit that typically goes to later stage companies, it seems like there's no effect at all. Minnesota's later stage in venture capital was growing faster than Wisconsin's over this period of time. When comparing the period before and after the credit. By contrast, on angel investment, Wisconsin was doing a little better than Minnesota over this period, and you can see on the table on page 10 the different rates of growth for the two states. So, you could say, hey, that shows that the angel credit in Wisconsin is actually working, that it's causing more angel investment to go to Wisconsin than it would if we'd assumed that the two states would grow at the same state. Now, there's the same rate. Now, there should be a lot of caveats about that because we're looking at a very, very small period of time and a very small number of data points. I don't think you couldn't do an empirical test and find that it's statistically significant. But in any case, there's sort of like this is a more detailed anecdote than what you get from the testifiers that yes, there is some growth, but it's not clear. I don't think we can say that it's correlation or causation. Now, the report goes on to sort of talk a little bit about what the implications of that are, and I won't get into that. But one thing to think about in thinking about offering these incentives. That anytime you offer an incentive like this, where some of the activity is going on, and clearly the numbers show, even despite the fact that people come up and say, look, it's hard to get angel investment in Minnesota, that's true, I'm sure, but there still is angel investment going on in Minnesota. So when you provide a tax credit, there's going to be a number of people who are going to get that tax credit for stuff they would have done anyway. And so there's a cost element. So one of the things you'd have to think about as policymakers is you're going to have, if you want to change behavior, you're going to have to be sure that you offer enough tax credits so that most of it doesn't just go to those people who are doing stuff anyway. And in extrapolating from the Wisconsin experience, we've got such a bigger market in Minnesota that your tax credit's going to have to be bigger. Not bigger in the sense of 25% being higher, but the authorized amounts of credits. Both Wisconsin and Minnesota have dollar limits on their credits. But because Minnesota is so much a bigger market than Wisconsin, you're probably going to have a higher dollar amount of authorization than Wisconsin does, or you run the risk of having too much of it go to people who are already doing this anyway. So that's the other point. I won't to make about this. The second part of the report goes into the sort of the advantages and disadvantages of using a tax credit versus a grant. And I won't belabor and go through all of the discussions of that so that you have time to do other things, but a couple of key points to point out. First of all, some of the testimony I think is a little bit misleading in the sense that people have in their minds that grants are sort of fit into a traditional mold where you use a grant and you have somebody in a state agency looking at requests for proposals by businesses and picking out which business is the best business to invest in. There's no reason why you as the legislature have to structure a grant program that way. you can structure a grant program that works exactly like a tax credit that says you go out and find angel investments, and you will qualify for a grant the same way the investor would qualify for a tax credit. Now, there's no sense in doing that if you're going to give the grant to the investor. But if you give the grant to the company, there is a tax advantage to that. These companies are not in the profit-making phase of their operations. So you can give a grant to the company, and yes, that will be a taxable income to the company, but because the company doesn't pay tax, it's not going to be paying tax on it. If instead you give the tax credit to the investor, these investors, by definition, as the chair indicated, are all very high-income people. They have to qualify under the SEC regulations. So they're going to be paying federal tax. They're typically probably going to be in the top federal bracket. And, of course, state income taxes are deductible in computing your federal tax. So if you reduce their federal tax, their deduction for the federal itemized deduction for state income taxes goes down. That means they pay more federal tax as a result of that. What happens is about 35% of these tax credits are going to go straight to the federal treasury. But if you give the grant directly to the company, because it's not paying tax, that's not going to happen. But, of course, the advocates say, wait a minute, we want to get investors involved. We want to get, because they add value to the company. And that's probably true. But you can design a grant that still gets investors involved, because it says, look, the only way you get the grant is if you go out and get angel investments into your company, and then the state will provide a grant to the business. And that does provide an incentive to the investor, because suddenly when you own stock in a company, you own a fraction of that company. And if the company gets a grant that's equal to the credit you would have gotten, suddenly you own a fraction of a company that's more valuable. Put another way, it means the angel investor doesn't have to put as much of their money in that they otherwise would. With the credit mechanism, you put in more money and then you get some of it back from the tax system. This way you put in less money, but then the company gets money. So there's, and there doesn't have to be any picking or choosing winners and losers in this either, because it can, the qualification rules can be the same as they are for the tax credit. So there's a federal tax advantage to using a grant. Now, there's what's the disadvantage of the grant? Well, the disadvantage probably is that everybody uses tax credits. And so the investment market out there is not used to this kind, would not be used to this kind of grant mechanism. And so you're more likely, the folks that are trying to attract the investors are going to have a harder time convincing them that, hey, this works not just the same as the tax credit, but it actually could work better because it has a federal tax advantage to it. The second big difference between the tax credit and the grant is that with the tax credit, in order to benefit from it, the investor's got to have a state tax liability. If you don't have a state tax liability big enough to take up the whole credit, you're not going to benefit from it. With a grant, that's not relevant. So you could go out and find an investor in Missouri or in California, and you could say, look, you're not going to get our Minnesota Angel Investment Credit, but the company will get a grant. Now, Representative Dabney's bill tries to it, will get a grant. Now, Representative Dabney's bill tries to address this by saying, look, the California investor can then sell their tax credit to a Minnesota taxpayer who can use it. And yes, that results in the same advantage, except two things. One is you're going to have to hire somebody to find that Minnesota taxpayer, and no Minnesota taxpayer is going to pay you 100 cents on the dollar for a tax break. Otherwise, why would they do it? So there's going to be a couple of discounts involved here. So those are the two main advantages, disadvantages of the grant versus the tax credit. The paper goes into all of this in more detail.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Chair Winteski, we have been the majority caucus chairman of the Wisconsin House of Assembly has decided that he would like to say a few words if he could. I think this is paramount to having the Speaker of the House come to your committee. So if Representative Peter Barca, did I say that correct? Well, you know, you try and do a whole region.
Good afternoon. Well, thank you very much, Mr. and Madam Chairwoman. It's nice to be with you here today. I've lost my voice, so please excuse my voice quality. It's usually a little stronger than this. But I've certainly listened with great interest. It's fascinating. I've been working very closely with Senator Kathy Saltzman. We've been looking at ways in which we can attempt to provide perhaps reciprocity between the two states so that we can find a manner in which we haven't been too successful on the income tax side. So we're kind of swimming against the stream. Although I will say Minnesota is the only state we've had this difficulty with for whatever reason. But nonetheless, we are looking at the notion of trying to regionalize, angel investment purposes. We've been pleased that we have had a number of companies in Minnesota come our way to take advantage of our angel investment credit. We certainly feel that it's in both of our states' interests to try and work cooperatively together. I think our state tax structures are fairly similar, although, you know, your legal counsel did point out some striking differences. The only thing I would add as an addendum, though, quite frankly, is when you talk about the size of your angel investment or your venture capital fund, I think it's really your venture capital fund you're studying, not your angel investment fund. While it's true you're the size of your overall pool is much larger, if you look at the number of deals that have come through, I think you'll note that Wisconsin's done about double the number of deals over the course of the past 5 to 10 years. So I think that is one striking difference. So we might be like Avis Car Rentals. We're second, but we're trying harder. So thank you very much. It's nice to be with you. I was in Eau Claire. Part of the reason for my being here today is I chair a partnership for a stronger economy, which was created to bring together about a dozen to 20 company presidents and economic development professionals from different regions of the state and various business groups that are involved in various sectors of our economy. And we had a hearing in Eau Claire yesterday. And so I'm up here just for the day. We've got a couple of meetings in the Twin Cities area. I'm heading from here to tour the pipeline that brings petroleum in from crude petroleum in from Canada through Minnesota, our state. So thank you for the courtesy of allowing me to testify here.
Thank you for joining us today. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day. And let's see. I think that should end it, unless I was just going to ask if there's anyone from the governor's office that cares to comment. No? he's smiling, but he's not going to move. So with that, I'll open it up.
just maybe one quick word, Chairman. First and foremost, Ward Ines with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Maybe first and foremost, I want to thank Representative Dabney, Representative Winkler, obviously the chairman, working on this proposal over the interim. The governor's supplemental budget will be introduced either the tail end of this week or early next week, and we will have an angel investment credit in that. And it would basically, in all material respects, be identical to Representative Dabney's proposal. So I look forward to discussing this in greater detail, both in the tax committee and Representative Mahoney's committee. And I appreciate the tax chair taking the opportunity to vet this proposal early and often in this session. I think in the past, maybe it's kind of been left to the end of the session. And room 15 in the conference committee to fully vet and do the due diligence on the proposal. So I really appreciate the fact that we're kind of moving forward. A unified front, I think a bipartisan unified front, maybe the both best approach. But we're not saying that the Dabney Pawlenty proposal is cast in stone.
We have that on tape, right?
But I think there'll be opportunities maybe improve the final product. But we think we got the good mechanics, the good parameters for having angel investment credit that is comparable to those states we compete against, that's competitive, and also will serve the best interest of, just the Minnesota taxpayers. So I look forward to working with you all on this proposal. And I think we've introduced it 5 or 6 times, so I'm tired of working on it. So I'd like to check it off before the end of my tenure here at State. Yeah.
Commissioner Ines, would you be willing to stay for just a moment? I just see the person who wrote the report for PricewaterhouseCooper wanted to say a few words, but if you'll stick around, the room's open for a good length of time afterwards, and I'm not going to gavel this shut until we have to.
Absolutely, Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Herr, is it, I believe, from PricewaterhouseCooper?
It's Herr. Jay Herr. I'm a partner with PricewaterhouseCoopers. Have followed venture capital for the last 13 years and commented on it every quarter, so I'm a close studier of what venture capital has done both in our state and the region. And I just wanted to add a couple of comments to, provide a more complete summary of the facts about how Minnesota has done relative to Wisconsin. Let me first say in the area of the per capita study, we did the original study on this and shared it with the Star Tribune, which did the story a month or two ago that garnered some attention. Clearly looking at things from a per capita basis, I think is fair to equalize states of different size. Ohio, Michigan, and Illinois are 2 to 2.5 times our size, and so if one is strictly looking at the amount of dollars that's raised, one does need to take per capita into consideration. I have looked at the study that was done or the review by the House staff. In the first 15 pages do talk about venture capital and the variety of ways of reviewing that, in particular in Minnesota versus Wisconsin. Of those 15 pages, the first 9 pages essentially talk about per capita data, and I agree with that. However, the last 6 pages I don't really agree with, and unfortunately that's where the conclusions lie. Let me explain that in a little greater detail. One of the challenges in looking at this area is that angel investments are not tracked by our survey. We only track venture capital. And there are some studies that have been done that show that angel investment could easily be matched with venture capital or far exceed it in terms of early stage companies. So one of the challenges here is to be assessing tax credits that are going into a financing arena that is only partially captured. So the way it works is an angel investor, and there's a clear reason why angels are called that, but for that individual, that company would probably die, come along and invest in these companies, and it usually takes several rounds of private capital before those companies are even able to get venture capital. So not all angel deals turn into venture capital deals. And so we've got to be careful about assessing the merits of an angel tax credit strictly by looking at venture capital. But let me address more importantly, I think the piece that's missing from this study, and that is one really needs to look at the rate of growth, not just per capita. So maybe here's a good way to set the context. The United States has a far greater per capita income than China. However, our GDP is growing at a much different rate. So the study that was done initially really looked at per capita venture capital overall. And yes, Minnesota, because of its legacy and the fact that we've been in the entrepreneurial community for 50 years plus, has got a big lead. However, as it relates to rate of growth, if one looks at the number of companies that have been formed in Wisconsin over the last cycle, which ran from 2003 to 2008, Minnesota's deals basically dropped by 5%, and I'm talking about a venture capital cycle. So when the bubble burst, things started to pick back up in 2003 and continued through 2008 before that cycle ended. So Minnesota's deals dropped by 5%. If you look at the Great Lakes states in the area, the number of deals for those states, excluding Minnesota and Wisconsin, actually grew by 80%. And if you look at Wisconsin, the number of deals grew by 300%. So I would contend looking strictly at per capita, while a valid metric to assess, one needs to look at the rate of growth. And that's probably understated because there are a number of angel-led deals in Wisconsin, and we've long kind of marveled at the degree that their angel network works effectively. Those numbers are not really reported to the venture activity, so the results are probably better. So to summarize, I would say that the rate of growth that Wisconsin has had is quite a bit better than Minnesota. And the reality is, if it weren't for one particular industry in Minnesota, that would be medical device, we'd be in a world of hurt. medical device was only 20% of our industry investments back in the 95 to 2000 time period. It's now 68%. So the good news is that we have a very vibrant and strong industry, but frankly, that's carrying us. And I agree with the previous comments about the anemic state of the financial community. We are in really tough shape when it comes to early stage investments. So my belief is that this is a very effective and targeted way for the state to help encourage investments in companies, because the reality is the broker-dealer network, the level of venture capital interest, and a variety of other parts of the financial ecosystem are not there as they've used to be, and we need to do something.
Thank you, Mr. Herrick. I appreciate this. The members, we have some questions. I think Representative Winkler had a question. And whichever testifier you want to call back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Mr. Hare or Mr. Michael or anybody could probably address the question. I'll preface this with three facts. Number one, I carried an angel investor bill very similar to this, I think, 2 years ago. Number two, I am an author of the CAPCO Venture Capital Tax Credit Fund. And number three, for the last 5+ years, I have been an employee of a startup company in the technology field. So I have a legislative interest and a personal interest in this. And to me, the question, and yet I'm a skeptic of these things, and I think we should all be skeptics of all tax credits, and that they have a case to be made, that they have to make, then they have to bear the burden of making that case. And the key question that Mr. Hare was discussing and Mr. Michael was discussing is whether or not capital markets are operating efficiently in Minnesota, whether there might be some reason why there is less venture capital or early stage money coming in Minnesota right now. Perhaps that's because we're at a relatively low period of innovation. Perhaps it's because other states have captured more of those dollars through credits. Perhaps it's for a change in culture. Maybe Minnesota has had a harder hit to its financial portfolio than other states. There are lots of questions about why we might be in this situation, whether it's good or whether it's bad. And the fact is that we don't have a lot of data. And so to me, I think it's very important that we have the hearing. And I'd be interested if there's anybody here who has economic or financial market insight as to reasons why we might be here, as opposed to anecdotes, which frankly are not very valuable for determining whether or not it's a good policy to pursue. So in general, I think we should look at this carefully, and I think it's a good start, but I think we need a more thorough examination to really show what types of credits actually are effective or important in work, and which types of credits are just really an incentive to an industry that may or may not need them, and they may or may not be efficient. So I just hope we can get more analysis, more facts, more data for this discussion. My instinct says we should do these things, and my experience suggests we should do them. I don't think that's good enough for policymaking, so I hope we can find ways to get more information about it.
Not a total question in there, but I think Representative Gotwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. I don't know that I have so much of a question, although I think it was important, the last testifier, clarifying that the conclusions of the study presented here are a bit questionable as well. And while I respect Representative Winkler's comments about anecdotal evidence and needing more information, as somebody who worked in economic development for a number of years and have spoken with literally hundreds of small and medium-sized businesses, and several of them specifically about venture capital and the importance of it in growing businesses, I think if you visit with the people, the job creators of Minnesota, they will tell you loud and clear, especially those in incubators or in startup situations, that access to venture capital is critical, and that things like angel investor tax credits can make a huge difference. You know, we spend a lot of state money on a lot of things with less evidence than we've garnished right here at this hearing today. And I think this is an opportunity for us to say, are we going to put our money into the goose that lays the golden egg or not? Are we going to strike a blow for helping our businesses succeed and create jobs? And especially up front, when you hear the evidence of the last testifier about the number of startups in the rest of the region versus Minnesota, that is extremely compelling. That is extremely compelling. We need to do what we can to grow jobs. People with jobs need less help and pay more taxes. And if we want to turn this state around, we've got to start doing things like this. And frankly, that's pretty darn good evidence, Representative LeClaire, I think. I would suggest that you go out and talk to more businesses and ask them about what this could do for them.
Members, I think I'm not hearing questions, I'm hearing comments. So I'm going to go to the comment of the people with bills in front of us. That would be Representative Dabney and Chair Lincheski, if they either choose to have some closing remarks.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity for this debate. And well, we'll get to the debate in the Tax Committee, actually.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen.
I have little to say, mostly because I'm still trying to get my head around the Daphne Pawlenty proposal. So with that, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to have the conversation. I think the Angel Investment Tax Credit is a targeted approach that can speak to the needs of our economy at this time and the needs for job creation. I appreciate the opportunity today.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Chair Lincheski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just say that, Sam Gottwald, I hope you'll try to get on the Tax Committee, because this kind of analysis is the daily pursuit of the Tax Committee, and that's why people really want to get on the Tax Committee, and then they try to get off of it, because if you're not going to do your homework and read, you figure out pretty quickly you should be on the Tax Committee, because it is... we do a lot of analysis, and it's important because it's other people's money. So I do want to say going forward, you know, people know I've been a strong opponent of these sort of credits, and for many of the reasons that have already come out as we've talked today, and so I won't rehash that. I also play a role in this caucus for the Minnesota House in putting together bills that can pass. And it's my observation, and I think Commissioner Innes can tell you about our meetings, that the legislature, bipartisanly, and the governor and the speaker and the Senate majority would like a jobs bill this year. So we're all working on that. And everyone's going to have to give a little, you know, compromise a little bit here if people want a jobs bill signed. And so one of the ways I decided to do that was put together a bucket of ideas that I thought were either ones people wanted or we could get our heads around, and most importantly of all, never forget, that we could pay for. Now, I will just throw out, so everyone can go digest this, that the idea of paying for an angel investor provision with a provision that we thought the governor could sign has now been rescored, and the money's not there. So everyone needs to get busy figuring out if you want these kind of things. Once we figure out how to construct them, how are you going to pay for them? Because the truth is, this is a new spending program. This is a new spending program. That's what a credit is. It's a new spending program. It has a price tag on it. And so whether it's $4 or $5 million, or was stated by Mr. Hare, maybe it wasn't Mr. Hare, but it was in the study, and someone else said, look, you know, for it to really work, you got to be really big. So if it should be a 40, and Representative Broad has talked to me about this, in fact, if you really want it really effective in Minnesota, because Minnesota already has so much more than Wisconsin, you got to have a big margin here. So folks need to figure out how they're going to pay for that, and we know tax increases aren't going to be the answer. So folks need to tell us what they're going to cut to pay for this new spending program. And it is not a new spending program to the recipient of the tax preference, who now gets a tax subsidy. But to all the other Minnesotans, it is a new spending program, because we all get to either have less services for the same price or pay a new tax to come up with the money. So as we go forward, I really hope, as everybody seems to be united on this thing across the four caucuses and the governor's office, that everyone will honestly begin to answer how are they going to pay for this proposal. And I think that's going to be the crux of the deal. So it's fun to talk about all the good things it would do. It's much harder to figure out where you're going to get the money to do it. So I look forward to working with everybody. I really appreciate this. I just want to personally thank Chair Mahoney, who has graciously decided to do this with me. He'll probably never do it again. But, these are complicated issues. And for folks who just want to be political and power through them, the Tax Committee doesn't really address problems that way. So I think everybody learned something here, no matter where they've been on this, the people who stayed in the committee and thought it through. And I encourage everybody to really read the study or the report or whatever it is. And I would just finally, I would like to ask that if Pricewaterhouse or anyone else can provide me more data, I would love to get it. I will pass it on. I think we need to get to the next steps that Representative Gottwald just mentioned, and we need to add into these ideas. You know, there's a plus here if you can do these things for somebody. but there's a drag for someone else. And we also have to assess the drag. I mean, the drag is 35% of the money straight up off the top goes to the federal government. That's Minnesota taxpayers' money. And 35% of a tax credit goes right to the federal treasury. You know, you got to justify that. You better have a mammoth multiplier to justify that. Secondly, it's the actual cost of the credit. And thirdly, as was stated, a bunch of that money is going to go to people who are already doing it. We have $116 million of venture capital in Minnesota in the last 5 years without a credit. So the advocates need to really get serious about doing the data analysis before this can leave tax committee to show that all the negatives and all the drags and all the costs trounce, the costs are beat out by the benefits we're going to get. And we haven't gotten much past anecdote on that, and we really need that data. So please step forward, even if it's proprietary, and tell us privately off the record. If you can't show us your books, we get that. But we need more information other than assertions, and I think the four caucuses and the governor are committed to this, but in the end, it's got to be written, and it's got to work, and it's got to be paid for, and it's got to be signed. So I really hope everybody who really wants this will start working real hard, and I invite anyone to my office at any time, and I know Representative Mahoney has been doing the same thing. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
And one other comment from Representative Black.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the comments from the tax chair. Related to the facts and making sure that we have all the information at hand. The only thing is I wish we'd hold all bills to that standard in terms of how they interact, because I think one thing that a bill like this tells us is that Minnesota's economy is not standing alone, and that, you know, the interrelationships between what we do in a worldwide market are just, I think, sometimes beyond comprehension for those who are not actively creating the jobs and actively trying to find the money to do what we got to do on the ground. And so I appreciate, and I think, Madam Chair, that the advocates are working very hard in terms of making sure that they're making the case. I think they've made the case to us here today. I've been in and out doing a few things, but they've made the case that absolutely Minnesota needs to send a different message to the business community, not just the business community here in this state, but the business community nationwide, worldwide, that we are a place that wants them, we are a place that needs them, and we have the workforce that is a synergistic relationship, I think, that is very positive for all of us. And so I look forward to the continued discussion. And Madam Chair, I do think the bigger you go on a tax credit like this, the more effective these tax credits become. I think sometimes tax credits are so marginal in their impact that you can argue very easily that they're not worthwhile. But this one, in my view, you got to make it worthwhile, and you got to do it in a way that actually works. And so, Representative Mahoney and Representative Davney, I appreciate your approach. Minnesotans want us to find common ground. I said it yesterday. This is a bill that we can find that common ground and move forward, and I'm excited about it. I look forward to working with everybody on it.
Thank you, Representative Broad. I'm going to close with just this comment. Representative Barca from Wisconsin was correct. We have a regional problem. We don't have just a state problem. In the Midwestern region, we have Kansas City, St. Louis, Chicago, Madison, Minnesota, Rochester, and a variety of other high-tech pockets. We in the state of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Missouri, Kansas need to think larger. So this is a start. I hope we can find the data that will, calm your ears, and then move on to making this a regional area, a regional idea on how we grow our state. I want to thank all of the testifiers, all of the committee members, the people who have driven a long distance and spent a lot of time on this. Thank you so very, very much. I know you've all put a lot of work in. Some of you didn't get a chance to testify today, but I'm sorry about that. Take it this way, the members didn't get a chance to question. With that, I will call the meeting closed.